Hello.
Hiya.
I'm Wheeler. See some familiar faces over there. Some Overbrook heads. Yeah, I'm going to be reading the story tonight, and it's from my book, The Old Asylum. And most of the stories are fiction, but this one isn't. So, kind of about my history up there, and how we found it, and all that stuff. Alright, this one's called Sanatorium Days, Overbrook Nights. I had never even heard of the sanatorium, but I stumbled upon it one day while playing in the woods with some friends. We were building forts behind the Fox Hollow housing development in North Caldwell, which was still under construction at the time. The closer we got to the top of the hill, the more junk we began to find. Eventually, our quest for building materials led us to a crumbling road, which had been used as an illegal dumping ground for many years. After we got bored, picking through the trash, we made our way up to the water towers, where we first spotted the abandoned buildings looming over the trees. This was around 1987, when the entire tuberculosis hospital was still standing. The dilapidated structures were intimidating, to say the least, but they were also darkly inviting. We spent the first few months daring each other to cross the threshold, and it was terrifying, but eventually, after many repeated visits, I began to feel at home inside the sanatorium. Finding the abandoned hospital when I was 10 afforded me about 7 years of hanging out in the main buildings before they were torn down. After the county razed the hospital, only a few of the outbuildings remained. This was a devastating blow, but the unique geography of the hilltop prevailed as an impenetrable island of woods in a sea of suburbia. The remaining sanatorium structures continued to be a safe haven for anarchy long after the glory of the main buildings had passed. My early adult years were spent wandering the nurses' quarters, roaming through the forest, and hanging out on the roof of the red brick boiler rooms. The red buildings, as we called them, were the origin of the tunnels, where steam was generated and pumped through subterranean corridors to the hospital buildings. Before the demolition of the sanatorium, a trespassing teenager could enter the tunnels and emerge undetected on the other side of the hospital without being seen. This was especially handy if the police van happened to be patrolling Sanitarium Road. The underground passages were dark, scary, and lined from ceiling to floor with creepy, crawling cave crickets, but they appealed to the explorer in us as we sought to unlock the mysteries of the sanatorium. Further down the hill, at the Essex County Hospital Center, known to locals as Overbrook, there still exists a labyrinth of tunnels beneath the decaying mental hospital. Now that the old asylum is closed and being demolished, the tunnels are heavily patrolled and in some cases blocked off. But when I was a kid, Overbrook was entirely standing and only partially abandoned. We used to sneak into the tunnels from the hilltop side of Fairview Ave, cross under the street, and watch the patients through the windows of the steel doors. It was always kind of scary looking into the bowels of the working insane asylum and seeing the crazies wandering the basement hallways, but it was a thrill that never ceased to fascinate. The question I'm asked most when talking about my time on the hilltop is, what's the difference between Overbrook Asylum and the Essex Mountain Sanatorium? While both hospitals worked in tandem with each other and shared resources, there were distinct differences between the two institutions on the hill. The Essex Mountain Sanatorium was a tuberculosis hospital built in 1901 on the crest of Second Mountain in the Watchung Range. After a cure for tuberculosis was eventually discovered, the hospital was phased out and abandoned in the 1970s. For 3 decades, the sanatorium stood vacant on the top of the forested mountain until the last remnants were finally demolished in 2002. It was a rite of passage for kids growing up in the area to visit the abandoned hospital and scare themselves silly along the way. Stories were passed down through the grades at school, and every fall around Halloween, hordes of teenagers would discover the sanatorium for themselves. The isolation the sanatorium attained high atop Second Mountain made it a one-of-a-kind, never-to-be-repeated paradise in North Jersey. Meanwhile, during the 30 years that the TB hospital stood forsaken, Overbrook was still very much in operation, treating mental patients and operating a rehab called Turning Point. Many of the outbuildings on the asylum property were neglected and vacant, but most of the main wards were still in use. When Overbrook was finally decommissioned and abandoned in 2007, the locked wards held a similar lure for adventure seekers, but the geography surrounding the insane asylum was not as conducive to trespassing as the TB hospital once was. Overbrook is a sprawling complex on a busy road, making unwary trespassers easy prey for the ever-watchful police. The sanatorium, on the other hand, was an island unto itself, where you could smash everything in sight without fear. The theory was that once you got into the building, there wasn't a chance in hell that the police could catch you. This may have been a naive theory, but I wouldn't know, because I never once had to run from the cops. During the 15 years I spent hanging out on the hilltop, I never got in trouble or heard of anyone being chased by the police. The sanatorium was a forgotten place, where parental rules and government laws didn't seem to apply. There were no trespassing signs everywhere, but enforcing them didn't seem to be much of a priority. In the early years of my sanatorium experience, there was a police van that would occasionally patrol what was left of the paved roads surrounding the complex. The van would make its rounds, sometimes on a 12-hour shift, but since it was the only vehicle up there, you could hear it from a mile away. This van would appear at random times over the years, but never seemed to deter anybody. I suspect that it was some kind of administrative punishment for an officer to be put on sanatorium duty, because it truly was a boring and pointless job. At this stage, with the Essex Mountain Sanatorium long gone, the hilltop partially developed, and Overbrook being demolished to make way for condominiums, there isn't much left on Second Mountain besides memories. For those of us who grew up wandering the halls of the haunted hospitals, these vivid recollections persist with an energy of their own. My writing and stories are just the tip of the old asylum iceberg, but I'll leave you now with two of my own personal remembrances that will convey the mood of what the sanatorium was like for me. There I was, sitting in the copper-lined gutter of the main hospital, five stories above the courtyard with my legs dangling in space. I was probably 12 or 13 years old. In my hand was one of those really big bottles of Southern Comfort, usually given as a gift. The bottle was half full when I stole it from my friend's parents, and since it was too big to hide at home, I stashed it at the sanatorium for a few weeks while I nipped away at it. The fear of heights had not yet been impressed upon my young mind, and I was feeling no pain as I carelessly lounged five stories above the pavement. Below me were four teenagers who I didn't know, messing around in the courtyard. Eventually, they caught sight of me up on my perch and tried to start a friendly conversation from below. To this day, I don't know what I was thinking, but I tipped the whiskey all the way back, swallowed the last gulp of burning alcohol, and launched the oversized bottle into the abyss. It plummeted right at the group of kids, and I watched with instant horror as it fell. This act was so wholly unexpected that the kids just stood there as the bottle came hurtling towards them. Not only was it a surprise to them, but it also shocked the hell out of me. In my head, I had no intention of doing anything like this. It was one of those incredibly stupid and impulsive actions which seemed to define my adolescence. The bottle exploded on the courtyard pavement within a few feet of the kids. All of them were sprayed with flying glass, and they screamed curses at me as they retreated towards Verona, where they had probably come from. Despite my considerable buzz, a cold wave of fear ran up my back when I thought about what would have happened had that bottle hit one of those kids. Committing manslaughter was not something I wanted to do, but it was something that I had come very close to achieving. of my weirder stories from the sanatorium happened around the same time period. It's the only shred of evidence I've personally witnessed suggesting ghosts may possibly exist. I've been a skeptic since I was a kid, which is one of the reasons why I was able to get over my fear of the sanatorium as quickly as I did. Those dark hallways were no place for someone who believed in ghosts. Thousands of people died within those wards, and even if that hadn't been the case, the place just downright looked haunted. One day my friend Scott and I were patrolling the hallways of the main hospital. We were just leaving the chapel after retrieving my BB gun from the stash place in the ceiling of the auditorium. We walked out into the main hallway when suddenly we heard running boots at the other end of the corridor. Scott was one of the toughest guys I ever met, and I had what looked like an authentic machine gun in my hand. We glanced at each other and instinctively took off in pursuit. The footsteps were booking fast down the hallway towards a bridge that spanned the courtyard's driveway. Because of the way the bridge was situated, there was a slight angle in the hallway that obstructed our view. We couldn't see the person we were running after, but we could hear the fleeing footsteps pounding ahead of our own. As we made the slight turn onto the bridge, we caught a glimpse of our victim as he turned into the hallway of the main building. We heard him run for a few feet, open a door, and slam it behind him. This altercation had taken no more than 15 seconds from the time we heard him start running to the time he shut the door. We were at the door in an instant, and Scott violently kicked it in as I rushed in, wielding the BB gun. The room, as it turned out, was a public bathroom. We kicked in every stall and peered behind every nook and cranny, but there was simply no one there. We checked the ceiling, behind the door, behind the toilets. We looked out the window, which was a three-story drop onto the asphalt driveway below. We left the bathroom and checked all the rooms in the wing, but there was nobody there. The two of us had left footprints in the plaster dust of the floor, but ours were the only fresh prints to be found. After a while of fruitless searching, we started to get really spooked. I stashed my BB gun back in its hiding place and got the hell out of there. It was a week or more before I was able to shrug it off and return to the sanatorium. That's a little bit of a true story, true account. Anyone have any questions?
What's there now?
Well, the tuberculosis hospital, it's called the Hilltop Reservation, so there's an open space there, which is actually kind of cool. Unfortunately, it is being encroached upon by like a condominium complex and a bunch of McMansions, but it is quite a large open space, even still. Down below, what I call further down the hill, because that's usually the way I would go to it as a kid, the Essex County Hospital Center, Overbrook, which is all this. For instance, like right here, this was the old Mica building. This is gone. Most of the buildings there at the Essex County Hospital Center are now gone. But we were just in there the other day. I got a tour from the demolition crew, and it was still huge. Even though it was mostly gone, we still like got lost in there. That's how big this place was. Once the sun went down, we were like, wait, where are we? We're in the tunnels and we come out and it was just like totally dark and we couldn't tell where we were. But like a lot of it's gone, you know?
It's Which really. Which town is it in?
It's in Cedar Grove, New Jersey. Yeah, and then the
tuberculosis. And the TB hospital?
That was in Verona/North Caldwell/Cedar Grove. It was a huge property. This right here is a Rosessa Annie. And she was floating around the hospital for many years. You find her like in the morgue drawers, or you find her like in a hospital bed or in a big pile of rubbish or whatever. She was just all over the place, and the legend has it that she was haunted by the ghosts of the insane asylum people that died there. And I suspect that it was just kids moving her around. Who knows, you know? Who knows what goes on there at night? So I don't know if the demolition crew threw her out, but I didn't see her when we walked through. It's weird because the place used to be just like cluttered hallways with like hospital beds and just, you know, all sorts of medical waste just left in place, as you can see here. But all that stuff has been taken out, so the demo team can like drive their skid steer and all their machines through there. And you know, it won't be up for much longer. That last tour was probably the last tour. So
what's in the future?
Condominiums. Yes.
When you say the last tour, do they give tours? You just want to do a tour.
Well, see, what it is I've been hanging out for the past, well, since 2011, I've been filming the demolition that's been happening there. And so after a while, I think that the crew just kind of like saw me. In fact, one of the members of the demolition crew is here tonight. And he took me on the tour. And so basically, I was there the other day, they're tearing the smokestack down. And it was really crazy. They put this big machine up there with a jackhammer on it, and they were controlling it remote controlly with this crane. So I was there filming this, and the big boss saw me crawling around in the bushes, and he was like, "Hey, you know, why don't you come in and get some closer shots?" So I did. I was like, okay. And then, you know, I got a whole tour of the whole place. So it was actually kind of funny because I gave them a tour because I knew where everything was and they didn't, you know. So and we walked right up these stairs right here onto the roof of reception. And it was just really awesome for me to go back there and see it again just that one last time and take the pictures I did. If anyone wants to see those pictures, they're up online. I made a video about it and stuff.
I went to school there.
I
lived there for 3 months, yeah. Trained, my nursing training was like there. And they had, I think what they called the Rights Pavilion was down below. There was, that was unlocked. But I'm trying to identify it. It's really
It's tough when it's all messed up like that, right?
Yeah.
Do you have any good stories about patients or anything?
HIPAA, I can't tell you anything.
I know where we are, our patients.
We had a very young girl that was there, and she was locked up for her life. And, you know, she was, we all became very attached to her. She was about 10 years old.
Really? Mm-hmm.
You know, back then they just didn't treat people when they do. It was like interesting. And then we had one other one that walked around all the time, an older woman with walking with the axe behind her back. Mm. And she had murdered her family.
Wow.
Oh, kind of reminded of Lizzie Borden.
Right.
And she just walked, that was in that Rights Pavilion, I can remember. Mm. As clear as, you know. But we lived up on the hill behind them.
When was it? When?
That was like in 63.
So that was really at the peak of, I mean, they were really doing a lot of business back then.
And I mean, they just treat you so differently now. It's just amazing.
Was it overcrowded when you were there?
Overcrowded? I didn't think so.
I know at certain times it was very overcrowded. I was just wondering if it was when you were there.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to say because they would be in the rooms locked in the rooms.
Right, so you have patients in these day rooms and they would get sweltering hot in the summer and very cold in the winter. And
Yeah,
I've heard some crazy stories too from other nurses who have worked up there. This one lady, she came to one of my book signings and she was 90 years old. She came up to me and she said that she had lived near the hospital when she was young. And at night, she would hear screams coming out of the hospital, like on the summer nights when they had the windows open.
Right.
And then later, she went and did her nursing internship in Overbrook, and she found out that the reason why these people were screaming was because they were doing insulin shock therapy on them, which is basically like an overdose of insulin. It has the same sort of effect as like electroshock therapy. And she found that she was the person now administering these tests and making the patients scream. So it was like she went full circle, you know? And then she worked there for many, many years. Another story I heard was before Verona Pool had the fences up, there was a patient that would wander off the grounds and he would go up to the pool and he had an imaginary fishing pole, and he just cast it into the water while all the kids are swimming, and he'd be there like linen floor, you know? And they'd have, the lifeguards would have to come up to the guy and be like, okay, buddy, okay, go back to Overbrook where you belong, you know? So yeah, there's a lot of stories from up there. Not all
of them. Do you know of any notable patients that were there? Any specific names?
What's that?
Do you know of any particular patients of note that were there? Or any names?
Well, that's kind of like confidential stuff. And, yeah. You know, when I went there, I would spend a lot of time in the basement of the reception building. And there was patient records strewn across the floors. And so there was like diaries that people left behind. There was all sorts of log books about incidents. So I spent many hours sitting there reading that. And I did recognize some names, actually. Not necessarily famous people, but people I recognize, big names around town or whatever. So yeah, there was people who were well known up there. But it's probably best to just leave that where it is, you know, and not mention any actual names. But, you know, it's estimated that 10,000 people died in Overbrook in the 100 years that it was in operation. And they had a four-drawer morgue in the basement that was put to good use. A lot of people went through that morgue. And like you said, a lot of people who were there, you know, here's a girl who's like 10 years old, she was going to be there for the rest of her life. And she was, probably, you know. A lot of people grew old and died in Overbrook. Another group of people, not just necessarily people with mental issues, but people who got old and didn't have anyone to care for them and maybe had dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever, ended up in Overbrook because there was no place for them to go. And a lot of them died there. I know that the population surged after World War II, and I think after World War I is that as well, because of what we call PTSD now, they used to call shell shock. And so there was a lot of people coming back from the war who just couldn't function in society. And there was a lot of tragedies up there with the way that patients were treated. But I think that the nursing staff and the doctors up there really had good intentions, and, you know, at the foundation of what they were doing. And yes, there was a lot of probably human rights abuses and experimentation that was done on people in the name of science to further mental health medicine. But if you look at what we do now with people, what replaced this hospital is a very small psychiatric hospital that's actually very close to the old site of the hospital. It's like right across, there's a train tracks, a path. And it's a minimum security place where people are locked up. It's designed for 3-day evaluations. So people go in there, if they're in crisis, they get evaluated, they get calmed down, and then they get released again back into the world. And there was just an article today on NJ.com about a guy who murdered his mom in Bergen County with a box cutter. I don't know if anyone read that article, but he had been committed 22 times for psychiatric care, and then he finally snapped and killed his mom, you know, after repeated 911 calls, all this stuff. So basically that's what Overbrook was for, those people who could not function in society and who kept needing care, even though they needed it every single day. They would flare up about once a month, like on a full moon like this, forget it, that place would be howling, you know? We don't have asylum anymore for our mental health, the people who are suffering, you know? Like, they either lock you in jail, they put you in the hospital for 3 days, or you can go live under a bridge somewhere, you know? Overbrook, for all its flaws, was a safe place for hundreds and actually thousands of people who needed asylum. So, you know, this is the back mail hill. It was a place where all the males were, and, you know, mostly violent males. And this is when they ripped the roof off, just before it got torn down. So this doesn't exist anymore. In fact, right here is the site of the new community center in Cedar Grove. So, yes.
Do When you saw the records that were strewn about, were they from the 60s or?
Yeah, they were from, all the way back from like the early 1900s.
Did you happen to notice some unusual diagnoses that we would?
Oh, yeah. Mainly venereal diseases was like a big thing in the notebooks. Like, it was a theme that kept reoccurring.
Yeah.
Suicides, attempted murders, a lot of incidents of fighting on the wards. You know, really juicy stuff, actually. It was pretty cool. Like, I literally, like, I would go there, I'd collect like a bunch of records and notebooks and whatever, and I'd go take them upstairs where there was a little bit more sunlight. I'd pull up a chair, I'd sit down at a table, and I'd just read them, you know? I'd take pictures. I have a lot of pictures of them. So, you know, it was like a library, basically, an abandoned library. Really cool. I spent a lot of time up there just reading and also doing some writing. You know, it's a good place. Yes.
So you have pictures of the records with like the names blackened out? So
I have them without the names blacked out at my house. Yeah, on my hard drive. I have like literally like thousands of pictures.
You should do a book now to cross out the person.
Yeah.
Because I would love to like read stuff like that. And my other question for you is, this is just more personal for me. Back in 1985, when I was at Montclair State College, in my psych class, one of the things we could do, and I don't know where they sent me, was to go and talk to patients who didn't have family alive anymore, and we could get credit for it. And it was somewhere in the room. But I don't know where, because those sound like those were torn down and decommissioned before that.
No, actually, it probably was this, because 2007 was when the hospital officially closed. There was a lot of abandonment going on, like, but yeah, it was open until 2007, and there was a rehab there for a long time, so it may have been there.
Because I remember I was on locked wards because I had to get permission, I had to have a nurse let me in and out.
Well, then it definitely was, because that's the only place with locked wards near Verona, you know?
Yeah, so the only thing I really remember when I went to go there to speak to this woman who was just a little kooky, that's why she was there. I do remember walking by one of the private rooms one time, where I call it private just because it wasn't out in the big room, and there was just a mattress with urine all over it, and it was running onto the floor. And I was like, where's that person now?
Right. Yeah, I've heard.
Okay, that's interesting. That's where I was.
I heard some really horrific stories, actually, about people coming like to visit their relatives and finding them in like a locked room covered in feces, just totally neglected. Because that's the thing about Overbrook, right? It was so huge. This place was massive. And when it got overcrowded, like during surge times, like after World War I and World War II, there was so many people on the wards that, you know, the loud ones would get all the attention because, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? But then the very quiet, like senile old women would be just sitting there, and they would often get neglected. They wouldn't eat enough. They wouldn't get their medications and stuff because they couldn't keep track of everyone that was there. And then there was a very famous incident in the 1920s where one of the boilers blew up during the winter time at a key moment, and 27 patients froze to death on the wards, you know, because they didn't have heat and they died in their cells. That's a lot of people to die all at once. So that was Overbrook's most publicized scandal over the years as far as neglect goes. But yeah, it was, like I said, there was a lot of really bad things that happened there. I do think, though, that the hospital staff, especially in the beginning, had the best intentions. So. Anyone else have any questions?
Greystone, was that also a psychiatric hospital?
Yeah, yep. They were sort of sister hospitals. Greystone was a really beautiful Kirkbride hospital, and it was designed by, I think his name was Robert Kirkbride, and he had a whole idea in his head that buildings could be therapeutic. He was an architect. So he built this really cool building that was just one foundation. That Greystone was one huge foundation going off in like two wings off the main building. And it was designed with this flow that was supposed to be therapeutic for your brain. And that was all well and good, but it also got overcrowded, just like Overbrook. And there was people piled up in day rooms, and you know, people sleeping on the floor, all sorts of terrible conditions. So that also sprawled out and became bigger, with buildings being built around afterwards. And of course, now it's completely gone. just like Overbrook will be soon. Overbrook wasn't really conducive to making condos out of the buildings that exist there now. It's very long, it's very low, it's, you know, these really long hallways. Greystone, on the other hand, was a taller building and would have made excellent housing if they had decided to save it. But they decided it wasn't economical. I mean, you gotta remember that there's a lot of asbestos and rotting plaster and all sorts of other contamination, medical contamination. And plus, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of people died within these places. So a lot of people don't really want to live in a haunted place. But it's my hope that when they do build condos here, where Overbrook was, that those condos will be extremely haunted.
So. Is Greystone the one that's in like near Morristown or Morris Plains?
Yeah, it's actually in Parsippany, but I always thought it was Morris Plains, but yeah. It's right there.
It just came down like a few years ago?
Just a few years ago. They had an effort to save it that was unsuccessful. A lot of people came out, rallied in front of it, had signs, you know, and, you know, the greed here runs deep in New Jersey. They want their condominiums. I think they made Greystone Park a park, which is cool. I'm okay with that. But I don't know. It's just, it hurts to see, especially at Overbrook. Man, there's like herds of deer, there's like fox, coyote, a whole ecosystem that was protected by these abandoned buildings because no one was building there, no one was developing it, and they had this safe haven where they can thrive. Now they're gonna add like, I don't know how many more people to the population around Cedar Grove, at least another 1,000 people are gonna be living there. People are all up in arms because the school system's gonna be overrun, and I don't really care about that, but what really bothers me is with the deer, you know? Where are these deer going to go? They're already in people's backyards. They're already running down to like where I live in Montclair. So it's pretty sad because they're going to lose their home. Yes?
What were the admittance requirements? And was there like a month, did families pay to have their family members brought there?
No, it was a state hospital. And I think that the admittance requirement was, at least initially, that you're having some sort of psychiatric crisis. So a lot of times people would be freaking out, and they were maybe suicidal or homicidal or, you know, whatever crisis they were going through at the time. A lot of times they would be taken to Overbrook by the police and committed, usually for a 3-day commitment period. And then if they could calm down, maybe they'd be released to their family, or maybe they'd stay there for an indefinite period of time until they were evaluated to be safe to themselves and the community. So you could easily wind up there if you acted too kooky out in the world, you know, they could take you there. But it was generally for people who were violent. And also people who were senile, old people who didn't have anyone to take care of them. That was a major part of the population there. A lot. Did you see that when you were a nurse there?
I think, and I was talking about that lower building, the Wrightsville. Is it Wrightsville?
Yeah, that sounds pretty familiar.
Yeah, I think that was it. It was down the hill in front of it. That was mostly that type of patient. And they probably had the dementia that they didn't know what Alzheimer's was back then.
Right.
You know, various problems, but yeah, for a lot of them.
And probably like the mentally challenged, like with the retardation?
Same thing. But this little girl too, it's probably, you know, somebody, she might have been autistic or bipolar, you know, back then, you just didn't.
And I will say that a lot of the knowledge that we have and a lot of these terms and definitions came out of places like Overbrook, you know, where people studied mental health and they learned. But we still don't have the answers, and it's still tough for people today with mental health issues. So imagine what it was like back then, you know, when they just strap the electrodes on you and jolt your brain, you know, like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest type stuff. Not fun, you know. I actually when I was a kid, I was 17 years old, I got sent to rehab, and I was going to AA and NA meetings and stuff like that. And I quickly found out that this building that I have been infiltrating for many years has AA meetings there. So I started going to AA meetings at Overbrook and actually getting in legally. So I would sit there in AA, and I wouldn't even care about what they were saying in the meeting. I'd just be like, oh, you know, like, this is so cool. But then I started listening to, like, what the patients were talking about and stuff, and I got to meet a lot of the patients that way. And then, so that was cool. There was a couple AA meetings there, but then there was this one NA meeting in the Mike Award, and they gave me the key. And I made coffee there for 2 years, every Friday night. And it was an 11 o'clock meeting, young people's meeting. So I would go there around like 9 o'clock, make the coffee, and just hang out on the Lake Award until 11 when people started showing up. And then we'd just have our little meeting, and then we'd hang out there for another few hours. So every Friday night, I'd be hanging out at Overbrook. And one night after the meeting, we were all out in front of the Lake Award just smoking cigarettes. And I look up, and there's this lady up in the window, and she's like this, you know, really big lady. And I'm looking up at her, and she just lifts her shirt and flashes me, and puts her shirt back down, and it disappears. And I was like, "Whoa! Did anyone else just see that?" And no one saw it. It was just me. But oh my God, it was, you know, like, wow. Okay, I can see what these people are here for. There's a reason for it, you know. That was one of the funny things up there.
Did they commit criminals there?
Oh yeah, murderers, rapists, you know, people who needed to be locked up but had mental issues were there. So they went there and then they died there, you know, because they'd get locked up for life. It's like when you get a psychiatric commitment like that back then, it wasn't like, you know, the judge puts his gavel down and says, okay, in 30 years you're getting out. It's like, you know, in 30 years, if you're still crazy, they're going to keep you, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
What did your parents, I'm sure you didn't tell them you were in high school and 10 years old hanging out there. Did they want to clock you over the head?
Yeah, well, yeah, that was the thing. We, I had a bicycle. I lived in West Caldwell. And so it was like really close for me. So I just ride my bike with my friends up there. And my parents never really knew, you know, I didn't tell them. And anytime I had something that I didn't want them to know about, I'd hide it up at the sanatorium. So my BB gun was up there.
I was going to say, who got you the BB gun?
Yeah, no, they didn't know about the BB gun. It was like this big M16. So I had to like take that up there in the dark, you know, so no one would bust me. I'm like walking through the woods with this machine gun. You know, I'd always bring like booze up there and stuff, and we experimented. And back then at the sanatorium, it had a roof that was like 7 stories up, and it was an observation deck. So we would just like sit up on the roof and look at New York City, the whole skyline, and it was ours. We owned that. You know, it was, no one could touch us up there. There was no rules. And that's what I wanted to capture in writing this book, The Old Asylum, was kind of like that vibe of when
Did
I was
you
a kid.
Salvage? Some of the stuff that you saw
there? Well, actually, over here, and after the reading, I'll have these for sale, but now that I'm kind of like friends with the demo crew up there, they hooked me up with like a bunch of wood from the demolition. So I took it, I chopped it up, and I put pictures in there, like mounted pictures that I took of the old asylum. So if anyone wants to take one of those home, you can buy it. You can choose one from over there. You know, I'm not really like a burglar or like a thief, so I don't really steal like too much stuff. I take a lot of pictures, you know, and that's how I keep these things. Like, for instance, like the patient records, like I just sat there in my camera, you know, just clicking, clicking, clicking. I didn't even read them sometimes. I'd just sit there and just take pictures of each individual paper. So I could go home and just flip through it right there on my big monitor, you know, read everything in detail. And then, you know, if I ever want to do anything with it, I have it. So my way of collecting was through the camera and through my impressions. And when the sanatorium was there, I didn't carry a camera until I was in my 20s. So my whole, I had like one part of my life where I didn't take any pictures at all. And then I have the second part of my life where I like obsessively take pictures constantly all day long, you know, and that's the part I'm living right now. But as you can see, obsessively taking pictures all day long pays off when you're taking pictures of a building that's not going to be there much longer, you know. This was like in the back of the powerhouse where they just tore down. This was actually like a train shed where they would drive the train in, they dumped the coal, and then they'd drive the train out, and they'd have all the coal they could fire the boilers with. So that was really bad, and that all got torn down. And recently, they just finished with this powerhouse. So looking at this is like kind of heartbreaking for me. I know probably a couple other people here too, you know, just like, oh man, wish it was still there. Because it's just going to be condominiums. It's like, ugh. I don't know. It was a dangerous spot, but it was awesome.
You think about like salvaging and reusing, but I don't know that anybody would want to be a bathtub that was once. And there was a picture there that looked really cool of a bathroom.
Right.
But again, yeah. I don't know if that's something you really want.
I actually, I own a house in Montclair with my wife, and we were having some like problems with our chimney, and so I went there and grabbed a whole bunch of bricks and came home and fixed my chimney.
That's what I was really thinking, that's beautiful brick.
Yeah, it was just really nice brick, so now I have a haunted chimney in my house.
My dad would take his car and go into the city. I'm from Staten Island originally, and would go into New York when they were knocking buildings down back in the 70s. Collected brick, and the whole back of my mom's house is all big patio from all the bricks that he just collected.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, if you can put it to use, it's great. I mean, this wood that I got, it was just like shredded from the machines tearing it apart, you know? So it wouldn't have really been good for anything except for kind of like what I used it for, like an art project, you know? Occasionally, if I see something cool, I'll grab it, but usually, you know, a lot of I'm sneaking around in there because I don't want to get caught. And so if I do get caught, it's a lot better if I'm walking out with nothing in my hand. You know what I mean? Rather than stealing something, because that's like a whole other trip down to the Essex County Jail in Newark, you know?
Where do you explore now to keep yourself busy?
Oh, well, the Passaic River is actually, like, I started out at Overbrook on the hilltop. But, you know, one of my main exploration focuses is the Passaic River. So I've been through Chatham, you know, under Main Street. I've done the whole river, and I've explored abandoned buildings up and down the Passaic River. So that's really like my focus. And this book here kind of came in the middle of me writing a book about the Passaic River. I've been writing a book about the Passaic River now for about like 10 years. I spent 2 years on the river in my speedboat on the lower river, exploring and patrolling, and so I'm writing about that adventure. But then a publishing company contacted me and said, hey, do you have any good stories about Overbrook? And I was like, actually, yes, I do. And so that's how this book came about. It was kind of like, just like, okay, yeah, sure. So, and I also have a spoken word album, and actually I'm gonna read you something else from that. Right now, and it's called Winter Wander. Freezing Overbrook sunrise, fresh snow crunching under boots, roaring red reflections in glass of every unbroken window, capped in white bricks and snow to accent red bricks and bright red glare under fancy copper gutters. Elaborate leaders and a frozen copper cupola with morning raven croaking at the dawn like a haunted rooster. Not complaining of the cold, but reveling in it just like me. Every step breaking clean snow. The only prints from herds of deer in fresh powder over deep drifts in grazing lines up the field. Past the gazebo, walking through tall dead grass, morning fog still swirling, soon to be burnt off by the sun, but not just yet. Everything above the mist is sharp with long morning rays, and the windows catch and hold beams of color, lit up so bright it looks like fire, but with no smoke. A grinning jack-o'-lantern, out of season, but perfectly placed to inspire Halloween feelings all year round. Normally, this would be a bad place to walk, up the field and on the roads, just outside the backside of the hospital. Not so dangerous today, though. The roads up here haven't been plowed all this year, so the cops can't drive up so easily to bother with people like me, who are now inside the decaying asylum, where it's even colder than outside, and breath billows in basement of reception, staring at the four-drawer morgue, spray-painted stainless steel drawers of the cooler, with racks for body storage, these dirty trays of death, so solid. The morgue drawers have been vandalized, but in general, the apparatus is still intact and hasn't been collected for scrap metal or dismantled for souvenirs. It's dirty here. The sense of death and mortality is strong. Also, it smells pretty bad, even on this frozen morning. Further down the hall, the science laboratory with its massive autoclave and submarine-style wheel for big sterilization jobs that are no longer performed. Bags and bags of biohazard medical waste left to rot on floors, tables, gurneys. Moldering medihazard covering every available surface, and entire libraries of patient records spilling out of ancient filing cabinets. Stories of phobias, venereal disease, mind sickness, agony, grief. Vandals have strewn them across the floor for my reading pleasure, but not today. Suddenly craving sunshine. Take the stairs leading up out of the low basement. Piles of pigeon dung on landing under a broken window, frozen enough to not get stuck between waffle tread of boots going up, up, up to the roof of reception, standing at the edge, five stories high, looking out on snowy world below, the sun now peeling back mist over Verona, Cedar Grove, Montclair, Claridge House landmarks on the next mountain to the east, now visible, cold and clear, fog almost gone. Three turkey buzzards soaring overhead, riding high airwaves, looking for moist red spots in all this white. And Overbrook is a tremendous red splotch, dead carrion leftovers of an obsolete institution. But their view is white-capped roofs of snow, punctuated by gaping holes where dormers or copper cupolas were stripped for scrap, and dripping water rotted wood underneath, collapsing into gaping holes and contrasting sharply black with snow around. Down below, a herd of deer paw at the drifts for buried greens, smoke emanating from quadruped nostrils and billowing clouds. Lovely vegetarian beasts living off the land. Down there in the sanitarium field, lone buck standing apart from females, munching and staring into the woods. And it feels good to be up here, dressed warm in toasty gloves, two insulating layers under pants, sweatshirt under heavy jacket, not rushed or pestered by the cold, no need to seek warmth inside, not that inside would be any warmer anyway, here in Overbrook, where it is colder indoors than out, except in steamy summer when the heat builds up and the mental ward comes to a boil. This asylum always struggled with temperature control. Funny how things never change. But no matter what the reason, Overbrook smells bad, like mold, soggy plaster, disinfectant, medical waste, and death. But wait, things are changing here. "This will be Overbrook's last winter. Where these wards stand, next year will be new condominiums in the final stages of completion, lining this property in rows and clusters, growing on the old asylum land like fungus on a corpse. The creeping spores of modern overpopulation, land lust, and greed. But the smell of Overbrook, that rank, infested, fly-blown hospital stench, is so supernaturally strong and persistent that it will surely infect the new condos,
yes,
which will reek from the foundations up,
yes,
of sick, mental patient ghosts standing in line outside master bedrooms looking for nightly medication from sleeping tenants who had no idea this space on the second floor of their new home was the nurse's station of the back male hill, where the deranged sex offenders and violent criminals still haunt ghostly hallways. And oh, what a day at the Overbrook Asylum. Walked the entire hospital and didn't encounter a single living soul. Overbrook is such a tourist trap these days, it's nice to get some alone time. That's why I visit during rainstorms or after heavy snowfall, early in the morning or in the dead of night. It's also good during cataclysmic world events, when everyone is distracted by TV and emergencies, while I haunt the old asylum alone, still in shadows, sometimes sitting in day room chairs, taking in the mood of the abandoned asylum, everything covered in muck and plaster sludge, growing moss, now brown and icy and cold. Spray-painted vulgarities on walls, ceiling, and floor. The old layers of paint beneath new spray paint, peeling off in fish food flakes, covering rotting linoleum tiles and destroying good graffiti. In this case, a huge demon face that utilizes holes in the wall for eyes. But now the plaster is chipping and the demon is left with half a face. Fun stuff like this. The asylum is a museum of still lifes that will give you a shudder even in the summer. The very essence of spooky horror, the main line of rotting decay. No ordinary vacant abode, but a full-fledged, haunted, abandoned mental institution. Essex County Hospital Center, Overbrook. Spent two-thirds of my life over the brook. It won't last much longer, but I will always have this Overbrook day, now with frozen fingers and ink-stained hand from scribbling a notebook about winter wards and sanitarium impressions, collecting words from Overbrook before the old asylum falls." That's from my spoken word album.
Those who had no families, where were they buried? Was there burial ground on the premises?
No, that's actually the one part of Overbrook that is kind of lacking, no graveyard. So I guess they would be buried, you know, somewhere in Newark. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I don't know what that noise is. Haunted podium. So yeah, I'm not exactly sure. That's my answer to that. And I would guess that if, you know, they weren't unaccounted for, like if they did have family, then they would just go to a private cemetery somewhere. Mm-hmm. If they were unaccounted for, yeah, they'd probably go to like a Potter's Field somewhere, you know. Anyone else have any questions or stories or anything like that?
How much is still visible if you rode down there? I mean, is there enough to kind of get your bearings?
There's a lot. There's a lot. You can't really see a lot of it from the road. You know, but like this building here is, this is the demolition of the administration building, which you're probably familiar with. It's like, you know, right on Fairview Avenue, sort of the main place where the cops would always be sitting, and that's where they drop people off and whatever. They tore that down during the summer, and then then everything else is kind of like set back a little bit down the hill and inside. So the reception building is still there. There's a bridge that goes from the reception building over into the main ward. So a lot of the female wards are still there. And that's about it. Powerhouse is gone. Mica building is gone. Backmail Hill is gone. Everything on the other side of Fairview Avenue torn down. So.
It'd be wonderful to see like an aerial shot. Have you ever been able to get like a drone up there?
Yeah, it's funny because I work at this sawmill now where I'm a videographer, and so I fly a drone. And I would the other day when they were doing the smokestack, I had the drone with me, and I was like, oh my God, I want to just fly this drone right now, but I couldn't because it's my work drone. And I don't really have enough money to replace it if I crash it, you know? So I just like contented myself with a zoom on my camera. But yeah, there's people out there who have flown over with drones, and if you look it up on YouTube, you can easily find it. Some pretty cool shots.
That's just how I get my bearings.
Mm-hmm. Only problem is you know, there's a fence around it, so the people who were flying drones, they would tend to fly very high, so they could get like panning shots without going into the fence, because if they were to lose their drone for some reason, they wouldn't be able to go retrieve it because it's off limits area. What?
Unless they knew you.
Yeah, I'm not allowed in there either, except that one time. I got lucky, but. So I think that they were very cautious, but if I was going to fly my drone in there, I'd be like flying low and getting some, you know, cool stuff up close, but they didn't do it that way. So yeah, this is gone. This is cool. The only thing left in that picture is that light post is still there, which is weird. But I think this is like the sequence of it coming down too. I was there like every single day taking pictures of the progress, and I have a lot of video of it too.
I wonder where the heck they take all that rubble.
Well, the steel is worth money. Okay. And then, you know, like the wood and the brick and stuff and everything else. Basically, all the metal is good, and, you know, for scrap, but everything else is just like landfill, you know. So that's why, like, that wood is completely worthless, but I wanted it because it was worth something to me. So.
How big is the property, acreage?
I think it's like 300 acres, just the Overbrook property. And then on the hilltop, there's like another 200 something. So it's very big, huge. And there was something like estimated, I don't know how many miles of tunnels underneath. They had tunnels up on the hill. Because that's the tunnels were for steam. So they had a powerhouse where they would create the steam. And then underneath, from the powerhouse, all the tunnels basically started and went up to every single building. So it was a subterranean maze under the ground. And as a kid, that really appealed to me. You know, I was like, I saw this dark tunnel. And when we first started going in, the lights were still on because the mental hospital was still being used. So we'd be like creeping through these tunnels. And then later on, when the power was off, they were even scarier, you know?
What was the purpose of the tunnels? Just communication between the buildings?
No, it was for the steam. So they would create the steam in the powerhouse, and the tunnels were steam tunnels, and they had these big, you know, cast iron, huge pipes, and all that steam would get pumped up. So
it was heat.
The powerhouse was over here, and then you had the rest of the complex over here. So everything that was close to the powerhouse was like really hot. So, you know, the wards over there would be like sweltering. You see patients like, you know, just like dripping with sweat. But then all the way at the end, the other end, patients would have like ice in their toilets, you know, or like in their sinks or whatever. It was frequent plumbing problems because of the cold, you know, a lot of frozen pipes. So it was a very inadequate heating system. And then when it failed, you know, they had that tragedy where all these people died and locked in their cells, which was horrific, you know.
How did you manage not get lost when you were in?
I get lost there all the time, you know. That's part of the fun, you know.
I guess lost, where you like, I mean, because you make them sound like so long and going on, that I'd be afraid that I not get my, on my way back out.
Well, in 2007, when they first closed the asylum, the county went through there and they took all the locks off all the cells and all the doors. So they didn't want you to get locked in there, you know? And luckily, I never did. I did hear about someone going in there and getting trapped inside and having to, like, bang on the windows, and a cop was patrolling and he heard some, like, banging noise, and it turned out that it was, like, a reporter. He got stuck in there.
Well, that was the thing. When you showed a picture of the morgue, those doors still looked like they were on. Maybe I'm...
They're gone now. Out. Yeah.
But I'm surprised that no one...
That was...
Went in there as a joke and... We
had leave your friend in there for an hour. There's a lot of pictures of people laying down in those doors. But now, if we were just in there the other day, on that last walk that I took, and there's no more doors and there's no more trays. So people have taken the trays and taken the doors. But the stainless steel structure is still there intact. And there's also like a laboratory right next to it with all these really big autoclaves, huge autoclaves. And everyone, it's funny, you see on Instagram, like, kids think that the autoclaves were like a crematorium or something. They have all these, like, thoughts on what these things were. All they are sterilization things, but everyone thinks, like, oh, that's where they burn the bodies, you know? That's the type of, like, weird urban legend that comes out of places like this, which is pretty cool. So, any more questions before we wrap up?
How do you pronounce your last name?
That's a good one. It's Antabinez. It's phonetic.
Thank you. Sorry.
Yes.
So you were hanging out there as a teenager and stuff, and I'm sure others were. Did it get its own little society of sort of teenagers and kids hanging out there?
Big time. Oh, yeah.
I can imagine.
Yeah, and it's funny because like we went there the other day, and you can see like people will spray paint one thing on the wall, and then someone will reply to it, and then someone will reply to that. And so it's like a message board, it's like a billboard, you know, like people just posting bells up there. And so and you have all these ridiculous things that people say. Now that the internet is a part of it, it changes the whole thing because people will go up there and put a web address up, or they'll put like an Instagram thing, and then they'll start insulting that person. And so yeah, it's this whole very juvenile, but kind of fun thing. A lot of penises.
Large bathroom stall.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was especially up at the sanatorium where I first started. Man, you know, you could do anything up there. So there was just two entrances on the road, and they were both blocked off, so no one could drive up there, including the police. And so we would just be up there, spray painting everything, smashing toilets, breaking windows, you name it, we'd just be up there doing it. It was like paradise. Down in Overbrook, though, it's a little bit different because it's right there near the road, the cops are always there, the cops are circling all the time. Now it has 24-hour security because it's being demolished, and so it's really hard to infiltrate now. It's not impossible, but a lot tougher. So. Basically, what is up there, those messages are now a little bit outdated because people aren't going up there as much. So it was cool to get that one last look. Yeah. Anyone else? All right, well, my video's over, so so am I. Yeah. And if anyone wants to buy a book or a CD or a piece of reclaimed wood or a nightshade on a mistake, I'll be sitting right there. Thanks, everyone, for coming.